This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents The Land of Stories, The Enchantress Returns, written and read by Christopher Colfer.
To Hannah, for being the bravest, strongest, and most honest person I know, and for showing that it's impossible to be cursed when one has a heart as courageous as yours. Also, for giving me my first black eye. You were 4, I was 9. It still hurts. Bubba loves you. The world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything. Albert Einstein. Prologue. The Rise and the Return. The East was in a period of great celebration. Daily parades marched through the village streets. Every home and shop was decorated in colorful banners and wreaths, and handfuls of flower petals were thrown and floated through the air. Each citizen smiled, proud of what they had recently accomplished. It had taken over a decade for the Sleeping Kingdom to fully recover from the horrific sleeping curse of the past, but at last, it had restored itself to the prosperous nation it had been before. The people of the East charged into the future, reclaiming their home as the Eastern Kingdom. A week's worth of celebrations concluded in the Great Hall of Queen Sleeping Beauty's castle. It was so crowded the entire kingdom seemed to be there. Many had to stand or sit on windowsills. The queen herself, her husband, King Chase, and the royal advisor sat at a high table overlooking the festivities. A small performance was taking place in the center of the hall. Thespians reenacted Sleeping Beauty's christening, portraying the fairies who had blessed her and the evil enchantress who had cursed her to die after pricking her finger on the spindle of a spinning wheel. Luckily, another fairy reformed the curse, so when the princess eventually pricked her finger, she and the entire kingdom simply went to sleep. They slept for 100 years, and the performers took great delight in recreating the moment King Chase kissed her and awoke them all.
"I think it's time we dispose of our little gifts from the queen," a woman shouted from the back of the hall.
She stood up on a table and cheerfully gestured to her wrist. Everyone in the kingdom wore flexible bands around their wrists, made from tree sap. In the years prior, Queen Sleeping Beauty had instructed them to snap their wrists with them whenever they felt unnecessary fatigue. The bands helped the citizens stay awake, fighting off the lingering effects of the curse. Fortunately, the bands weren't needed anymore. Everyone in the Great Hall ripped them off their wrists and threw them happily in the air.
"Your Majesty, won't you tell us again where you learned a trick like that?"
a man asked the queen about the bands.
"You think strangely of me when I tell you," Sleeping Beauty said. "It was from a child. He and his sister were visiting the castle a year ago. He said he had used a band to keep himself awake in school and suggested the kingdom try it."
"Remarkable," the man said and laughed with her.
"Fascinating, isn't it? I believe the most extraordinary ideas come from children," the queen said. "If only we all could be so perceptive, we would find the simplest solutions to the greatest problems are right under our noses."
Sleeping Beauty lightly tapped the side of her glass with a spoon. She stood and addressed the eager people.
"My friends," Sleeping Beauty said, raising her glass. "Today marks a very special day in our history, and an even better day for our future. As of this morning, our kingdom's trading deals, crop production, and overall consciousness have not only been restored, but improved since the sleeping curse was cast upon this land."
Her people cheered so loudly the castle shook with joy. Sleeping Beauty looked to her side and shared a warm smile with her husband.
"We should not forget the horrible curse of the past, but when we look back upon this dark time, let us remember how we triumphed over it," Sleeping Beauty continued.
Small tears formed in her eyes.
"Let it be a warning to all who try to interfere with our prosperity. The Eastern Kingdom is here to stay and stands united against any force of evil that gets in our way."
The approving roar was so loud it actually knocked a man off the windowsill he sat on.
"I have never been prouder to be among you than tonight. Here's to you," the jubilant queen said, and the room joined her in sipping from their glasses.
"All hail Queen Beauty,"
a man in the middle of the hall shouted.
"All hail the queen,"
the rest cheered with him.
"All hail the queen! All hail the queen!"
Sleeping Beauty waved at them graciously and took a seat.
The festivities continued into the night, but just before midnight, the queen was overcome by a strange sensation, a feeling she hadn't felt in years.
"Well, isn't that bizarre?" Sleeping Beauty said to herself, looking off into the distance with a smirk.
"Is there something wrong, my love?"
King Chase asked. Sleeping Beauty stood and headed toward the staircase behind them.
"You'll have to excuse me, dear," the queen said to her husband. "I'm rather sleepy."
She was just as surprised to say it as he was to hear it, because Sleeping Beauty hadn't slept in years. The queen had made a promise to her people that she wouldn't rest until the kingdom was properly restored. Now, looking around at all the joyous faces in the hall, both the king and queen knew that the promise had been fulfilled.
"Good night, my love. Sleep well," King Chase said, and kissed her hand.
In her chambers, the queen changed into her favorite nightgown and slipped into her bed for the first time in over a decade. She felt as if she were being reunited with old friends. She had forgotten the feeling of the cool sheets against her legs and arms, the softness of her pillow, and the sinking sensation as she settled into the mattress. The sounds of celebration could be heard in the queen's chambers, but she didn't mind. They were actually soothing to her. Sleeping Beauty took a deep breath and fell into a very deep sleep, almost as deep as the one during the 100 Years' Curse, except she knew she could awaken any time she wished. When King Chase joined her later, he couldn't help but smile at the sight of his wife peacefully sleeping. He hadn't seen her look this way since the day he saw her for the first time. In the Great Hall, the celebration finally concluded. The lamps in the fireplaces were extinguished throughout the castle. The servants finished cleaning up and were dismissed to their quarters. All was finally quiet in the castle. But a few hours before dawn, the silence was broken. Sleeping Beauty and King Chase were awoken by a thunderous banging on their chamber door. The king and queen instantly sat up.
"Your Majesty!"
a man shouted from the other side of the door.
"Forgive me, but we must come inside."
The door burst open and the royal advisor ran into the room, followed by a dozen suited guards. They surrounded the bed.
"What on earth is going on?"
King Chase yelled.
"How dare you barge into our—"
"I'm so sorry, Your Highness, but we must get the queen to safety immediately," the advisor said.
"Safety?"
Sleeping Beauty asked.
"We'll explain on the way there, Your Majesty," the advisor said. "But right now, we must get you into the carriage as fast as possible. Only you. Traveling alone will be much less conspicuous than a carriage transporting you and the king."
The advisor looked at her with frantic eyes, begging her to oblige. The queen froze.
"Chase?"
Sleeping Beauty said, and looked to her husband. She wasn't sure what to do. The king was at a loss for words.
"If they say you need to go, you must go," was all he could muster.
"I cannot leave my people,"
Sleeping Beauty said.
"With all due respect, Your Majesty, you're no good to anyone dead," the advisor said.
Sleeping Beauty felt the pit of her stomach drop.
What did he mean, dead?
Before Sleeping Beauty knew it, the guards had lifted her out of the bed and onto her feet. They quickly escorted her and the advisor to the door. She didn't even get to say goodbye. They rushed down a spiral staircase to the lower levels of the castle. The stone steps were rough on the queen's bare feet.
"Someone please tell me what is happening," Sleeping Beauty said.
"We must get you out of the kingdom, as quickly as possible," the advisor said.
"Why?"
she asked, starting to fight off the guards escorting her. No one replied, so she stopped in the middle of the stairs, solid as a rock.
"I won't move another step until someone informs me. I am the queen. I have the right to know."
The advisor's face went pale.
"I don't mean to alarm you any more, Your Majesty," he said, his jaw quivering. "But shortly after midnight, after all the guests had gone home, two soldiers on duty near the front of the castle witnessed a bright flash of light, and a spinning wheel appeared out of thin air."
Sleeping Beauty's eyes grew wide, and the color faded from her face.
"They didn't think it was anything serious. A foolish prank to spoil our party this evening, perhaps," he continued. "The soldiers went to inspect the spinning wheel, and it burst into flames. As soon as it did, something else happened."
"And what was that?" she said.
"The vines and thorn bushes that covered the castle during the sleeping curse, the plants that were cleared out and dumped into the thorn bush pit, are growing back," he told her. "I've never seen anything grow so fast. Nearly half the castle is covered already. The plants are consuming the entire kingdom."
"Are you telling me that the curse in the thorn bush pit has spread throughout the kingdom?" Sleeping Beauty asked.
"No, Your Majesty," the advisor said with a heavy gulp. "That was just an old witch's curse. This is dark magic. Very powerful dark magic. the kind our kingdom has only been exposed to once before.
No, Sleeping Beauty gasped and covered her mouth. You don't mean...
Yes, I'm afraid so, the advisor said. Now please cooperate with us. We must get you out of the kingdom as quickly as possible.
The guards grabbed hold of the queen again, and they traveled deeper into the castle. This time, she did not fight them. They ran down the stairs until there were no more stairs to descend. They shot through a pair of wooden doors, and Sleeping Beauty found herself in the castle stables. There were four carriages in front of her. Each was circled by a dozen soldiers on horses and ready to depart at any second. Three of the carriages were bright and golden, of the queen's personal collection. But she was escorted to the fourth, a small, dull, and unassuming one. The soldiers surrounding this carriage weren't dressed in the armor like the others, but were disguised as farmers and townspeople. The guards lifted the queen inside it. There was barely enough room inside for her to sit.
"And my husband?" Sleeping Beauty asked, as she put a hand out to prevent them from shutting the door behind her.
"He'll be all right, ma'am," the advisor said. "The king and I will be traveling as soon as we send out the decoy carriages. We've had this planned in the event the castle should ever be under attack. Trust me, it's the safest way."
"I never authorized such plans," Sleeping Beauty said.
"No, it was your parents' order," the advisor said. "It was one of the last things they instructed before they died."
This news made the queen's heart pound even harder. Her parents had spent the majority of their lives trying to protect her, and even in death, they were still trying.
"Where am I going?" she asked.
"The Fairy Kingdom for now," the advisor said. "You'll be safest with the Fairy Council. The decoy carriages will be sent in other directions as a distraction. Now you must hurry."
He gently pushed her the rest of the way inside and shut the carriage door firmly behind her. Even the dozen guards surrounding her small carriage did little to comfort her. She knew the situation was beyond their ability to protect her. The advisor nodded to the decoy carriages, and they set off. A few moments later, he nodded to her driver, and, like a cannonball, the queen's carriage shot off into the night, the horses galloping at full speed. Through her carriage's tiny windows, Sleeping Beauty saw the horrors that the advisor had described to her. Scattered all across the castle grounds, she saw soldiers and servants fighting off the rogue thorn bushes and vines growing around them. The plants grew straight out of the ground and attacked them, like serpents wrapping around their prey. The vines crept up the sides of the castle, breaking through the windows and pulling people out, dangling them hundreds of feet in the air. Thorns and vines shot out of the ground toward Sleeping Beauty's carriage, but the soldiers were quick to slice them with their swords. Queen Sleeping Beauty had never felt so helpless in her life. She saw villagers, some within reach of her carriage, fall victim to the leafy monsters. There was nothing she could do to help them. All she could do was watch and hope she could find help once she reached the Fairy Kingdom. The guilt of leaving her husband and kingdom behind weighed heavily on her, but the advisor was right. She'd be no good to anyone dead. The castle grew smaller and smaller behind her as the carriage traveled away from the devastation. Soon they were passing through a forest, and all the queen could see outside were dark trees around them for miles. Even after an hour of traveling, Sleeping Beauty was as scared as ever. She kept whispering to herself under her breath, "We're almost there. We're almost there," though she had no idea how close they were. Suddenly, a high-pitched whooshing sound came from the trees. Sleeping Beauty looked out the window just in time to see a soldier and his horse thrown high into the forest beside the path. Another whooshing sound swooped toward them, and another soldier and his horse were thrown into the trees on the other side of the path. They had been found. Every other second was filled with the terrified cries of the soldiers and horses as they were flung into the forest. Whatever was out there, it was picking them off one by one. Sleeping Beauty crouched down, trembling on the floorboard of the carriage. She knew it was only a matter of time before all the soldiers were gone. One final swoop took the remaining horses and soldiers with it. Their cries echoed in the night. The carriage crashed to the ground, falling on its side and skidding across the ground until coming to a stop. Everything was quiet in the forest now. There wasn't a sound of wounded soldiers or horses to be heard. The queen was all alone. Sleeping Beauty crawled through the carriage door and carefully made her way down to the ground. She was limping and clutched her left wrist, but was so frightened she barely felt her injuries. Was the attack over? Could she safely call for help or search for survivors? Surely, if whatever was out there wanted her dead, she would have been killed by now. Sleeping Beauty was just about to call for help when a blinding flash of violet light filled the forest. The queen screamed and fell to the ground, covering her face, but the flash lasted only a second. She smelled smoke
and got to her feet and looked around. The entire forest was ablaze, and every tree had been turned into a spinning wheel. There was no denying it now. The kingdom's greatest fear had come true.
"The Enchantress," Sleeping Beauty whispered to herself. "She's back."
Chapter 1. A Train of Thoughts. The subtle jerks of the train rocked Alex Bailey awake. She looked at the empty seats around her while she remembered where she was. A long sigh came out of the 13-year-old girl, and she neatly fixed a strand of strawberry blonde hair that had escaped her headband.
"Not again," she whispered to herself.
Alex hated dozing off in public places. She was a very smart and serious young woman and never wanted to give the wrong impression. Luckily for her, she was one of only a few people on the 5 o'clock train back into town, so her secret was safe. Alex was an exceptionally bright student and always had been. In fact, she was so advanced she was part of an honors program that allowed her to take an additional class at the community college in the next town. Since she was too young to drive and her mother worked the majority of the day at a children's hospital, every Thursday after school, Alex would ride her bike to the train station and travel the short distance into the next town for her classes. It was a questionable trip for a young girl to make by herself, and her mother had had reservations at first, but she knew Alex could handle it. This short journey was nothing compared to the things Alex had handled in the past. Alex loved being a part of the honors program. For the first time, she was able to learn about art and history and other languages in an environment where everyone wanted to be there. When her professors asked questions, Alex was one of many people to raise her hand with the answer. Another perk of the train ride was the downtime Alex got to herself. She would gaze out the window and let her thoughts wander while the train traveled. It was the most relaxing part of her day, and many times she'd find herself drifting off to sleep. But only on rare occasions like today would she accidentally drift off completely. Normally, she would wake feeling embarrassed, but this time, Alex's embarrassment was laced with annoyance. She had just been having a disheartening dream, a dream she had had many times in the last year. She dreamed she was running barefoot in a beautiful forest with her twin brother, Connor.
"I'll race you to the cottage," Connor said with a huge smile.
He shared his sister's looks, but thanks to a recent growth spurt, was now a few inches taller than her.
"You're on," Alex said with a laugh, and the race began.
They chased each other through trees and over grassy fields without a care in the world. There were no trolls or wolves or evil queens for them to worry about, because wherever Alex and Connor were, they knew they were safe. Eventually, a small cottage came into view. The twins bolted toward it, putting all their energy into one final sprint.
"I win,"
Alex declared, when both of her open palms touched the front door a millisecond before her brother's.
"Not fair," Connor said. "My feet are flatter than yours."
Alex giggled and tried opening the door, but it was locked. She knocked, but no one answered.
"That's funny," Alex said. "Grandma knew we were coming to visit. I wonder why she locked the door."
She and her brother peered into the window. They could see their grandmother inside, sitting in a rocking chair near the fireplace. She seemed sad and slowly rocked back and forth.
"Grandma, we're here," Alex said, and cheerfully tapped on the window. "Open the door."
Her grandmother didn't move.
"Grandma?" Alex asked, tapping on the window harder. "Grandma, it's us. We want to visit you."
Her grandma raised her head slightly and looked up at them through the window, but remained seated.
"Let us in,"
Alex said, tapping on the glass even harder. Connor shook his head. "It's no use, Alex. We can't go in." He turned away and headed back in the direction they came from.
"Connor, don't walk away," Alex said.
"Why bother?" he said, looking back at her. "Clearly she doesn't want us in there." Alex began banging on the window as hard as possible without breaking it.
"Grandma, please let us in. We want to come inside. Please?"
Grandma looked up at her with a blank stare.
"Grandma, I don't know what I did wrong, but whatever it is, I'm sorry. Please let me come back inside,"
Alex said as tears began to spill down her face.
"I want to come in. I want to come in."
Grandma's plain expression turned into a frown, and she shook her head. Alex realized she wasn't going to be let in, and every time she came to this realization in the dream, she would wake up. It might not have been a pleasant dream, but it had felt so good to be back in a forest and to see her grandmother's face again. It was obvious to her what the dream represented, and had been since the first time she had dreamed it. However, Alex felt something different when she awoke this time. She couldn't help but feel as if someone had been watching her while she was asleep. When she had first awoken, although she hadn't paid much attention to it at first, she could have sworn she saw her grandmother sitting across from her on the train. Was this an actual sighting, or just her imagination getting the best of her? Alex couldn't deny the possibility that it had been real. Her grandmother was capable of many things. It had been over a year since Alex and Connor Bailey had discovered their family's biggest secret. When they were given an old storybook from their grandmother, they'd never expected it would magically transport them into the fairy tale world, and never in their wildest dreams had they expected that their grandmother and late father were from this world. Traveling from kingdom to kingdom and befriending the characters they grew up reading about had been the adventure of their lives. But the biggest surprise of all was when twins learned their own grandmother was Cinderella's fairy godmother. Their grandmother eventually found them and took them back home to their anxious mother. "I had to tell the school you both had chickenpox," Charlotte, the twins' mother, said. "I had to come up with a good excuse for why you had been gone for 2 weeks and thought traveling in another dimension would probably raise a few eyebrows." "Chickenpox?" Connor said. "Mom, you couldn't come up with anything cooler, like a spider bite or food poisoning?"
"Did you know where we were the whole time?" Alex asked.
"It wasn't difficult to figure out," Charlotte said. "When I got home from work, I went to your room and found the Land of Stories book on the floor. It was still glowing." She looked over at the large emerald storybook held tightly in Grandma's hands.
"Were you worried?" Connor asked. "Of course," Charlotte said. "Not necessarily for your safety, but for your sanity. I was worried the experience would overwhelm and frighten you, so I called your grandmother immediately. Luckily, she was still in this world, traveling with her friends. But after the second week of not knowing where you were, well, let's just say I pray I never have to experience that again."
"So you knew about everything?" Alex asked.
"Yes," Charlotte said. "Your dad was going to tell you eventually. He just never got the chance."
"How did you find out?" Connor asked. "When did Dad tell you? Did you even believe him at first?"
Charlotte smiled at the memory. "From the minute I saw your father, I knew there was something different about him," she said. "I had just started my first week of nursing at the children's hospital when I saw your grandmother and her group of friends come to read stories to the patients. But I was completely smitten by the handsome man who was with them. He was so peculiar. He stared around in amazement at everything. I thought he was going to faint when he saw the television."
"It was John's first trip to this world," Grandma said with a smile.
"He asked me to give him a tour of the hospital, and I did," Charlotte continued. "He was so fascinated to learn about it. The surgeries we performed, the medicines we used, the patients we treated. He asked if we could meet again later after I was done working so I could tell him more. We ended up dating for 2 months and fell in love. But then, strangely, he disappeared without warning and I didn't see him again for 3 whole years.
The twins looked at their grandmother, knowing a bit of the story already.
"I made him go back to the fairy tale world with me and forbid him to return," Grandma said and slumped a tad. "I had my reasons, as you know, but I was very wrong."
"And that's when he discovered the wishing spell and started to collect the items like us, so he could find a way back to you," Alex said excitedly.
"And it really didn't take him that long. It just seemed like it because we hadn't been born yet, and there was still time difference between the worlds," Connor added.
Charlotte and Grandma both nodded.
"I eventually saw him again at the hospital," Charlotte said. "He looked so frail and dirty, like he had been to war and back. He looked at me and said, 'You have no idea what I went through to get back to you.' We were married a month later and became parents a year after that. So to answer your question, no, it wasn't hard to accept your dad was from another world, because somehow I had known all along."
Alex reached into her bag and pulled out the journal their father had kept while he was collecting the wishing spell items, the same journal they had followed while collecting the items themselves.
"Here, Mom," Alex said. "Now you can know exactly how much Dad loved you."
Charlotte looked down at the journal, almost afraid to take it. She flipped it open, and her eyes watered as she saw her late husband's handwriting.
"Thank you, sweetheart," she said.
"Just to let you know," Connor said, "me and Alex did all the same stuff. We're pretty great ourselves. Just keep that in mind if you ever feel inspired to give us an allowance in the future."
Charlotte playfully glared at her son. They knew she couldn't afford to give them allowances. Since their dad died, she had had a hard time supporting the family and paying off debts from his funeral. But that got Alex thinking.
With all the connections their family had in the fairy tale world, why exactly had their lives been so tough the last year?
Mom, Alex said, why have we been struggling so much when all this time Grandma could have just waved her wand and made everything better for us?
Connor looked up at his mother, thinking the same question. Their grandmother went quiet. It wasn't her place to say.
Because your father didn't want that, Charlotte said. Your father loved this world so much. It's where we met, it's where we had you two, and it's where we wanted to raise you. He had come from a world of kings and queens and magic. A world of entitlement and undeserved luxury that he thought ruined people's character. He wanted you guys to grow up in a place you could get anything you wanted if you worked hard enough for it. And although there have been times a little magic could have gone a long way, I've tried to respect that.
Alex and Connor looked at each other. Maybe their dad was right. Could they have managed what they had done in the last week so they hadn't been raised that way? Could they have collected all the wishing spell items or stood up to the evil queen if he hadn't taught them how to believe in themselves?
So what happens now? Connor asked.
What do you mean, Connor? Grandma said.
Well, clearly our lives are going to be totally different now, right? He said with a twinkle in his eye. I mean, after 2 weeks of barely surviving encounters with trolls, wolves, goblins, witches, and evil queens, we can't be expected to go to school again. We're too mentally distraught, right, Alex?
Charlotte and Grandma looked at each other and burst out laughing.
So I'm guessing that means we still have to go to school?
Connor asked. The twinkle in his eye faded away.
Nice try, Charlotte said. Every family has its issues, but that doesn't mean you get to drop out of school because of it.
Thank goodness, Alex said with a sigh. I was afraid he was onto something for a minute.
Grandma looked up at the clock.
It's almost sunrise, she said. We've been talking all night. I better get going now.
When will we see you again? Alex asked. When can we go back to the land of stories?
Alex had wanted to ask that question since the moment they left. Grandma looked down at her feet and thought for a moment before responding.
You've had an awfully big adventure, even by grown-up standards, Grandma said. Right now, you need to focus on being 12-year-olds, in this world. Be kids while you still can, children. But I'll take you back one day. I promise.
It wasn't the answer she wanted, but Alex nodded. There was one more question she had been meaning to ask all night.
Will you ever teach us magic, Grandma? Alex asked with wide eyes. I mean, since Connor and I are part fairy, it would be nice to know a thing or two.
I completely forgot about that, Connor said, slapping an open palm to his forehead. Please leave me out of this. I don't want to be a fairy. Can't stress that enough.
Grandma went silent. She looked at Charlotte, who only shrugged.
When the time is right, sweetheart, I would love nothing more, Grandma said. But right now, the Fairy Council and I are working some things out. Things that are pretty time-consuming, but that you don't need to worry yourselves about. As soon as we move past it, I would love to teach you magic.
Grandma hugged her grandchildren and kissed the tops of their heads.
I think it might be best if I take this with me, Grandma said, referring to the Land of Stories book. We don't want history repeating itself.
She headed toward the front door, but just as she reached for the doorknob, she stopped and looked back at them.
I forgot. I didn't drive here, Grandma said with a smirk. Looks like I'll have to leave the old-fashioned fairy way. Goodbye, children. I love you with all my heart.
And slowly, Grandma began to disappear, fading into soft, sparkly clouds.
Okay, now that is something I'd like to learn how to do, Connor said.
He waved his hands through the sparkles in the air.
Sign me up for that lesson.
Alex yawned contagiously, and her brother followed.
You kids must be exhausted, Charlotte said. Why don't you go to bed? I'll be taking tomorrow off so I can be here with you guys, in case you have any more questions. And because I've just missed you.
In that case, I've got an important question, Connor said. What's for breakfast? I'm starving.
Alex's train finally reached her station. She retrieved her bike from the bike rack and pedaled home, still thinking about her grandmother. Alex had expected to live a dual-worldly life after discovering the fairy tale world. She imagined spending summers and holidays with her brother in the Fairy Kingdom, or Cinderella's palace with her grandmother. She imagined a brand new life of magic and adventure would begin immediately. Sadly, Alex's expectations weren't met. More than a year had gone by since the night their grandmother disappeared. They hadn't received a single letter or phone call explaining why she had been gone. She missed every holiday and their birthday, days she never missed. And to make matters worse, the twins hadn't been back to the Land of Stories either.
The twins couldn't help but be angry with their grandmother. How could she just disappear and never make contact again? How could she take them to a place they had been dreaming about since they were kids and then never let them return? Their grandmother herself had even said it. A part of the land's stories lived inside them. So who was she to keep it from them? Your grandmother is a very busy woman, Charlotte would tell Alex whenever the subject came up. She loves you very much. She probably just has her hands full at the moment. We'll hear from her soon enough. This wasn't enough to put Alex at ease. As more time went by, she began worrying whether her grandmother was all right, sometimes wondering if she was even alive. Alex hoped nothing had happened to her and that she was okay. She missed her hugs more than anything. Life without their dad had been the most difficult thing the twins had ever experienced, but life without their dad and grandmother was nearly impossible. What do you think is going on? Alex asked Connor on one occasion. I don't know, Connor said with a heavy sigh. The last thing she said to us was that she and the other fairies were working something out. Maybe it's just taking longer than they expected. Maybe, Alex said. But I have a feeling that whatever it was, it's much worse than she was letting on. What else would be keeping her away from us for so long? Connor just shrugged. I don't think Grandma would ever intentionally avoid us or exclude us from anything, he said. I'm just worried about her, Alex said. Alex, Connor said with a raised eyebrow. The woman is magic and has lived for hundreds of years. What is there to worry about? Alex sighed. I suppose you're right. She better have a great excuse next time we see her. Unfortunately, next time didn't seem like it was happening anytime soon. It was unsurprising that the situation had started affecting her dreams, but more than that, Alex was depressed. Ever since she had returned from the land of stories, she'd felt like a part of her was missing. The magical dimension had filled the emptiness she'd felt after losing her dad, and the emptiness grew every day she couldn't go back. The weekly trips to the college were always a major trigger for feeling this way. College was a place that represented the future, and even though Alex was years away from actually going to college, she didn't like planning any future that didn't involve the land of stories. How could she live a normal life when she had proof that she was not normal? Alex fantasized about moving to the land of stories one day. Could her grandmother teach her enough magic for Alex to become an official fairy? Could Alex become a member of the fairy council, or better yet, the happily ever after assembly? Alex tried doing magic on her own, but it never worked. The only time she had done something magical was when she accidentally set off her grandmother's storybook that transported her and Connor into the land of stories. But since it was her grandmother's book, she wondered if she was capable of doing anything alone. Sometimes, when Alex was feeling particularly desperate, she would go into the school library and find a random fairy tale treasury. She would hold it against her chest and think of how much she wanted to see the fairy tale world, just like she did the night of her 12th birthday. But it never did anything but attract unwanted attention from other students.
Why is she hugging a book?
A popular girl said to her snooty pack on one occasion.
Maybe she's taking it to homecoming,
another girl said, and they all laughed at Alex's expense. Alex was tempted to yell,
Hey, my grandmother is Cinderella's fairy godmother, and as soon as she teaches me magic, I'm going to turn you into the lip gloss you wear too much of.
But she kept these thoughts to herself. As Alex rode her bike the rest of the way home from the train station, she closed her eyes for a minute and pretended she was riding along Thumbelina Stream in the Fairy Kingdom. A herd of unicorns was to her left, and a hovering flock of fairies was to her right, and she was meeting her grandmother for a magic lesson on how to transform rags into a beautiful ball gown. Paradise, she thought to herself. Alex opened her eyes a second before crashing hard into a set of trash cans. Thankfully, the only witness was a garden gnome across the street. But even it seemed to judge her. She got up and brushed herself off, deciding to walk her bike the rest of the way home. It had been a brutal reality check. The Baileys still lived in the same rental house with a flat roof and few windows, but things were looking up for them. Their mother had finally caught up on a lot of their financial troubles and wasn't working nearly as much as she used to. However, something else had been occupying Charlotte Bailey's time recently, and it wasn't nursing. Alex parked her bike on the porch. The front door flew open just as Alex was about to walk through it. Connor was standing on the other side. He seemed very upset and very concerned about something.
What's your problem? Alex asked.
Sorry, I thought you were Mom, Connor said.
Do you need her for something? Alex said.
No, Connor said. Mom is just usually home by 6 o'clock every night.
It's 6 o'clock right now, Alex said, looking at him like he was a crazy person.
It's 6:15, Alex,
Connor said, raising his eyebrows.
So?
Well, where is she then? Do you see her? Is there a car parked in the driveway? Connor asked.
Maybe there's traffic, Alex said.
Or something else, he said, like something keeping her at work.
Is there a point to all of this? Alex asked, becoming annoyed.
I need to show you something, Connor finally admitted. But let me warn you, you aren't gonna like it.
Okay, Alex said, and followed her brother in.
A series of barks and whimpers came from inside the house as Alex stepped through the front door.
Buster! Down, boy! It's just Alex! Connor shouted. Why does this stupid dog act like everyone who comes inside this house is carrying explosives? We live here, too!
Are you going to tell me what's going on, Connor? Alex asked, running out of patience.
I'll show you. It's in the kitchen, he said. There's been a development.
Chapter 2. It started with a dog. A few months ago, Buster the Border Collie was rescued from the local animal shelter and given to the Bailey family. He was a gift from Dr. Robert Gordon, whom Charlotte worked with at the hospital, and who had become a close family friend. Dr. Bob, as the twins called him when he occasionally came over for dinner, was a kind man whose face settled into a natural smile. He was balding and not very tall, but had big, caring eyes that made him an instant friend to anyone he met.
"Oh, Bob, you shouldn't have," Charlotte said as soon as he surprised them with the canine.
"What's up with the pooch?" Connor said when he came to see what the ruckus was about.
"He's all yours," Bob said. "Your mom is always talking about the border collie she had when she was a little girl and said she's always secretly wanted another one. I was volunteering at the animal shelter, and as soon as I saw him, I knew I had to adopt him for you guys."
"We have a dog?" Connor exclaimed.
Although the words came out of his mouth, he hadn't fully grasped the reality of it.
"I suppose we do," Charlotte said.
Connor immediately fell to the floor and started rolling around with his new pet.
"We have a dog! We have a dog!" he exclaimed. "Finally, our suburban lives are complete! Thank you, Dr. Bob!"
"You're very welcome," Bob said.
"What's your name, boy?" Connor asked.
"Buster," Bob told him. At least that's what they called him at the shelter.
The black and white dog was obnoxiously happy and had bright green eyes, one of which was larger than the other. Bob had placed a red bandana around Buster's collar. Connor hugged him and almost cried tears of joy.
"I know we've just met, Buster, but I feel like I've loved you my entire life," he said.
"Who's this?" Alex asked when she came to see what was causing all the excitement.
"This is my dog, Buster," Connor said.
He took off one of his socks and he and Buster played tug-of-war with it.
"He's for all of you," Bob corrected him.
"Connor, don't use good socks," Charlotte said.
Alex unintentionally let out a high-pitched squeal and her mouth dropped open.
"We have a dog?"
she asked and jumped up and down. Something about Buster made the twins act like they were 10 again.
"Yes, we have a dog," Charlotte said and shared her smile.
"Don't be disappointed if he likes me more, Alex," Connor said matter-of-factly. "Dogs tend to bond with boys more. It's proven science, I think."
"Buster, come here," Alex called.
Buster ran straight to Alex's side and happily whimpered up at her.
"Never mind," Connor said, a little disappointed.
The twins were so excited to get a dog, they never questioned the gift for a second. They were so distracted playing with a new addition to their family that they didn't see Charlotte give Bob a long, thankful hug, an embrace that lasted too long to just be a friendly gesture. But as time went on and the twins saw more of Bob, they were forced to notice the signs that their mother and the doctor were more than just friends. Connor sat Alex down at the kitchen table as soon as she walked through the door. Although he saw them every day, Buster couldn't contain his excitement for the twins both being home. He jumped up and down and spun in circles around the kitchen.
"Buster, calm down," Connor ordered. "I swear, that dog needs to be on medication."
"What's going on, Connor?" Alex asked. "You love that dog as much as he loves you."
"That was before I discovered Buster was a bribe," Connor animatedly declared. "Take a look at this."
Connor retrieved a beautiful bouquet of a dozen long-stemmed red roses from the kitchen counter. He placed them on the table directly in front of Alex.
"Those are beautiful. Where are they from?" Alex asked.
"They were delivered when I got home from school," Connor said. "They're for Mom. From Bob."
Alex's eyes widened.
"Oh, dear," she said and gulped. "Well, that's very sweet of him."
"Sweet?" Connor said loudly. This isn't sweet, Alex. It's downright romantic.
Connor, you don't know he meant it in that way, Alex said. People send other people flowers all the time.
Connor searched through the bouquet. Daisies are friendly. Sunflowers are friendly. A Venus flytrap is friendly. But red roses mean romance, he said. And he sent a card. It's in here somewhere. I read it like 100 times before I threw it back in. Here it is. Read it.
He passed a small card to his sister, and to her horror, it was heart-shaped. She looked down at it like it had the results to an exam she knew she flunked.
I don't want to read it, Alex said. I don't want to invade Mom's privacy.
Then I'll read it to you, Connor said, and tried snatching the card out of her hands.
Fine, I'll read it, Alex said, and reluctantly opened the card.
Charlotte, happy 6 months. XOXO, Bob.
Alex quickly closed the card, as if trying to stop the truth from escaping it. Connor leaned close to his sister and studied her face, waiting for a reaction to surface.
Well? Connor said.
Well?
Alex said, as she ran through a dozen unlikely theories. We don't know that this means they're in a relationship.
Connor threw his hands into the air and paced around the kitchen. Alex, don't do that, he said, pointing his finger at her.
Don't do what? She asked.
That thing you do when you try to ignore a situation by making light of it, he said.
Connor, I think you're overreacting.
Face it, Alex. We were blinded by a border collie, Connor exclaimed, loud enough for the neighbors to hear him. Mom has a boyfriend.
Hearing mom and boyfriend made Alex squirm. In her opinion, the two words didn't belong in the same dictionary, let alone the same sentence.
I'm not going to get too worked up about something until I hear it from Mom herself, Alex said.
What more proof do you need? Connor said. Mom got a dozen red roses delivered with a heart-shaped card specifying an amount of time. What do you think 6 months means? Do you think Mom and Bob joined a bowling league and didn't tell us?
Both of their heads abruptly turned in the same direction when they heard the garage door open. Charlotte was finally home from work.
Ask her, Alex mouthed at her brother.
You ask her, Connor mouthed back at her.
Charlotte stepped inside a few moments later. She was still dressed in her blue scrubs from the hospital and carried a bag of groceries. She walked right by the flowers on the table without noticing them.
Hey, guys, sorry I'm late, Charlotte said. I stopped by the store on the way home to pick up something for dinner. I'm starving. I was thinking of making a chicken and rice something or other. Sound good? Are you too hungry?
Charlotte looked up when the twins stayed silent.
What's wrong? She asked. Are you okay? Wait, where did those flowers come from?
They're from your boyfriend, Connor said.
In the 13 years of being her children, Alex and Connor could count on one hand how many times they'd seen their mother become speechless. This was one of those times.
Oh.
Charlotte looked like a deer in headlights.
You have a lot of explaining to do, Connor said and crossed his arms. You should probably have a seat.
I'm sorry, did someone promote you to parent? Charlotte said and glared at her son.
Sorry, Connor said and lowered his head.
I just think we need to talk about this.
Is it true? Alex asked with a half-concerned, half-horrified expression.
Yes, Charlotte said with difficulty. Bob and I have been seeing each other.
Connor slid into a seat next to his sister. Alex's forehead hit the table.
I was going to tell you, Charlotte said. I was just waiting.
Let me guess, until we were older?
Connor asked. If only I had a nickel for every time we heard that.
Alex, watch out. We may be 2/3 of a set of triplets, but won't know until we're 30.
Charlotte closed her eyes tightly and let out a deep breath.
Actually, I was waiting until I could figure out how to tell you, she said softly. You guys have been so worried about not seeing your grandmother. I didn't want to add anything to your plate.
She took a seat and let the news sink in for a moment.
I know this is hard to swallow, Charlotte said.
Hard to swallow? We need an emotional Heimlich, Mom, Connor said.
I actually think finding out our grandmother is a fairy in another dimension was easier to process than this is, Alex added.
Charlotte's eyes fell sadly to her hands. The twins didn't mean to make her feel bad, but they were feeling so many things, they were forgetting to be considerate.
Bob and I have known each other for a very long time, Charlotte said. When your dad died, he became a very good friend. He was one of the few people I could talk to about everything that I was going through. Did you know Bob's wife died just a year before your dad?
Both of the twins shook their heads. You could have talked to us, Connor said.
No, I couldn't, Charlotte said. I needed another adult to confide in. You'll understand one day when you have kids. Bob and I each knew what the other was going through. We talked every day at work and became very close, and recently, that friendship has grown.
The twins couldn't decide if what she was saying was helping or making it all worse. The more she explained, the more real it became.
What about Dad? Alex said. Your and Dad's story was literally a fairy tale, Mom. He traveled from another world to be with you. Don't you still love him?
The question was heartbreaking for all of them, especially Charlotte.
Your father was the love of my life and always will be, Charlotte said. And these years without him have been the hardest of my entire life. We were married for 12 years, and in that time we talked about a lot of things, a lot of possibilities. I know for a fact that if I spent another year missing your father, he would be so disappointed in me. He would want me to move on as much as I would want him to move on if the roles were reversed. It was a promise we made to each other.
Charlotte went silent for a moment before continuing.
The first year after he died, I thought I never would be able to move on, she said. I thought a part of me died with him, and I would never be able to love anyone again. But then Bob told me he and his wife had made the same promises to each other just before she passed away, and he felt the same way. For some reason, just knowing someone else was in the same boat as me made everything feel so much better.
The twins shared a hopeless glance, knowing there was nothing they could do to ease their mother's heartache.
I know this is difficult for you two, Charlotte said. I'm not saying you need to be okay with it. You can feel however you want, and rightfully so. Just know that Bob makes me really happy, and it's been a long time since I felt this way.
Connor unsuccessfully tried keeping a question that popped up in his mind to himself.
Connor, what's your question? Charlotte asked, and dabbed the corners of her eyes with the edge of her sleeve.
I don't have a question, Connor said, and shook his head unconvincingly.
Yes, you do, Charlotte said, knowing her son better than he knew himself. You always purse your lips like that when you have something to ask.
Connor immediately repositioned his mouth.
It's okay, honey. You can ask anything, she said.
It's really childish and lame, Connor warned. I guess it's something I've always wondered about people who lose their husbands or wives. But one day, if we're all in, well, heaven, I guess, isn't it going to be a little awkward with Bob and Dad there? Alex was about to let out a disapproving sigh, but held it in. Even she had to admit it was a decent question. Although she felt horrible for feeling it, a part of her felt like her mom was being unfaithful to her dad. A smile came to Charlotte's face, and she let out a soft laugh. Oh, honey, if there's ever a time or a place when we're all together again, I imagine we'd be too happy to let things be awkward. Alex and Connor looked at each other and knew they were both thinking the same thing. The thought of their family being together again made them both smile. Charlotte placed her hands on the tops of theirs on the table.
Nothing any of us do will ever bring your dad back, she said. And nothing we do will ever push him further away either. He'll always be with us in our hearts, no matter what.
I guess putting it that way makes me feel better, Connor said.
Me too, Alex said. I'm glad to hear it, Charlotte said, and smiled at them.
She got up from the table and grabbed her car keys.
I don't feel like cooking anymore. Let's go get pizza instead. It's good to eat something heavy after a heavy conversation.
Chapter 3. Lunch in the Library. The next day at school, Alex was still having a hard time digesting the conversation and the pizza from the night before. The news of her mother's new relationship was a heavy thing to process and did nothing to help the gloomy state she was already in. She felt like she was slowly losing control over everything in her life, and she hated it. Alex desperately needed someone to talk to, someone who wasn't her mother or her brother, but an outside source who could hug her and tell her everything was going to be all right. She needed her grandmother. She would have given anything just to see her face again. However, since that was impossible at the moment, Alex settled on seeing a form of her grandmother instead. At lunch, she went to one of her favorite places in her world, the school library.
"Hi, Alex," the librarian said as Alex passed her desk. "You'll be happy to know I just ordered a new set of encyclopedias."
"Really?" Alex said. "That's wonderful."
She smiled for the first time all day. It faded a second later after she realized new encyclopedias was the most exciting news she had had in weeks.
"Thank you for your enthusiasm,"
the librarian said.
Earlier today, I told another student I was getting new encyclopedias. He asked me how long I'd be in the hospital. Can you believe that? Times are definitely changing.
They sure are, Alex said under her breath. Alex went to the very last aisle of books, where the children's literature was kept. Students weren't allowed to check out these books, as they were mostly used as reference for the English classes. From the top shelf, Alex pulled down an old book that was several hundred pages thick. It was exactly where she had left it on her last visit to the library. A Treasury of Classic Fairy Tales was written across its brown cover. It wasn't much to look at, and didn't have nearly as much majestic charm as her grandmother's Land of Stories book, but it had become Alex's favorite book to visit in the library. She looked around to make sure no one was watching her. Besides the librarian, who was busy at her computer, she had the library to herself. Alex opened the book and flipped through the pages. She skimmed through the illustrations of Sleeping Beauty and Snow White, of Rapunzel and Red Riding Hood, and of Goldilocks and Jack and the Beanstalk. Surprisingly, they were accurate depictions of the people she had met a year ago in the fairy tale world. Alex finally found Cinderella and came across the picture she wanted to see most, an illustration of the fairy godmother. Alex couldn't help but chuckle under her breath every time she saw it. The artist's version of the fairy godmother couldn't have been further from what her grandmother looked like. In this book, she was a tall and voluptuous woman with big lips, wings, long blonde hair, and a large golden crown. However inaccurate it was technically still her grandmother, and that was all Alex needed to see.
"Hi, Grandma," Alex said quietly to the book. "You look great. I like your crown and your wings. It's funny how different you look in every book I read. Are they just dramatic interpretations, or has your style changed over the years?"
The fairy godmother was just a young fairy living in the fairy tale world when she discovered there was another world. She was the first and only person in the history of both worlds capable of traveling between the two at will. She never understood why she was given such a gift, but magic had always had a mind of its own. The world was in a very dark place during her first visits. It was the beginning of the Middle Ages, and war and plague were everywhere she looked. The fairy godmother told stories of her world to the children she met to brighten their spirits. The tales gave them such hope and joy that she decided to make it her life's work to spread the history of her world and theirs. The fairy godmother eventually enlisted other fairies, including Mother Goose and members of the fairy council, to travel secretly with her and help spread the stories, hence the name Fairy Tales, giving a bit of magic to a world that had a little of its own. Over time, the fairies recruited other people, such as the Brothers Grimm and Hans Christian Andersen, to help keep their stories alive. The two dimensions operated on different time schedules. The fairy tale world moved at a much slower pace compared to the other world. The fairies tried to visit the other world as much as possible, but though only months would pass between visits in the fairy tale world, decades would have passed in the other world. It wasn't until Alex and Connor, the first children belonging to both worlds, were born that the dimensions began moving at the same pace. Alex and Connor were the links that held the two worlds together, and as Alex held the treasury of classic fairy tales in her hands, she could almost feel that power running through her veins. It was no wonder they had loved fairy tales their whole lives. Alex wondered if her grandmother had devoted the last year solely to spreading fairy tales around the world, or had something bad happened in the fairy tale world.
"Grandma, I don't know what's going on, but I could really use you right now," Alex said to the book. "Everything is changing. Everything is moving in directions I don't like. This whole growing up thing is a lot harder than I ever thought it would be, and not getting to see you makes it unbearable."
Alex took another look around the library to make sure she was still alone. She hugged the book as tightly as she could without damaging it and whispered into the top of its spine.
"Please let me come back to the Land of Stories," she said. "Let me join you and the other fairies. If something has happened, let me help you. I know I can. Please just send me a sign. Let me know that you're okay."
Alex held the book for a few moments more, hoping that maybe today would be the day she would be magically transported back into the world she loved so much. But to her disappointment, she stayed put in the library. Her whimpers didn't go entirely unnoticed, however.
"If hugging that one doesn't work, try one of these," said a voice from nearby. Startled, Alex dropped the treasury.
Down the aisle, seated on the floor with a few stacks of books piled around him, was Connor. Alex had completely missed him.
"You scared me," Alex said. She was embarrassed, not knowing what he had and hadn't heard her saying to the inanimate object.
"You're lucky I know you. Otherwise, I probably would have reported you to the school psychologist," Connor said, with a mocking but loving smirk.
What are you doing here? Alex asked him. She walked down the aisle closer to her brother and saw that the majority of the books around him were also different storybooks and fairy tales.
Same thing as you, apparently, Connor said, and then snickered to himself. Although I didn't try getting to first base with any of them or anything.
Very funny, Alex said, and took a seat next to him. Is this your first time ever being in the library?
Connor sighed and shrugged his shoulders. I've been in a bit of a funk today. I thought if I came in here and flipped through a couple of these, I would feel better, he explained.
Did it work? Alex asked.
For the most part, I'd say, Connor said. Why do you think that is?
Well, Alex said, straightening her headband, I read in a zoology book once that certain species of birds and insects that live in trees will climb down and hide in the roots if they ever feel their home is being threatened.
Connor looked at her like she was speaking in tongues. And how is that relevant to this topic?
Because, Alex explained, our home is being threatened. Things are changing. So here we are, in a library, reading old fairy tales. We return to our roots.
Sure, Connor said, only half understanding her comparison. How can you remember that, but you can never remember the names of singers on the radio?
My point is, Alex continued, sometimes all we need to see are a few familiar faces to make us feel comfortable again.
Connor nodded. Well, I wouldn't say I saw any familiar faces, he said.
He searched through his pile of books and pulled out a couple to show her.
In this, the Egyptian version of Cinderella, Grandma is a hawk, he told her excitedly. And in this one, Grandma's not even in it. Cinderella gets her gown and shoes from a tree. Can you believe that? Like a tree could give her a new dress. Please, a complete stranger with a wand is much more believable.
We should write letters of complaint, Alex said. Should we sign it as the grandchildren of the fairy godmother? Do you think they'll take it more seriously if we do?
They both laughed. Definitely, Connor said. Or personal acquaintances of the long-lost charming prince. I bet no one has ever heard that one before.
Both the twins went silent for a moment, and their amusement faded into despair.
I miss Froggy, Connor said. I miss saying Froggy.
There's not much we can do about it, Alex said. If Grandma wanted us to come back, she would tell us what was going on. Until then, I guess we'll have to keep hugging books.
Great, Connor said sarcastically. I wonder what Dad would tell us if he were alive. I don't think there's a story even in his catalog that could help us get through everything we're going through now.
Alex had to think about it. Most of her dad's stories have been perfect for their elementary school dilemmas. But what advice would he give them now? I bet he would say that everyone can have a once upon a time or happily ever after, but it's the journey between that makes the story worth telling, Alex said, and how characters face the challenges at hand is what makes them heroes.
Yeah, Connor said, something like that. You're good at this.
A high-pitched beep sounded as an announcement was made over the loudspeaker.
Connor Bailey, please report to the principal's office. Connor Bailey, please report to the principal's office.
Both of the twins looked up toward the speaker and then at each other.
What did you do? Alex asked. I don't know, Connor said with a gulp.
He mentally rewound through the past 4 weeks of his life, thinking of anything he had done that could warrant a trip to the principal's office, but found nothing.
At least I don't think I did anything.
Connor collected his things and put the library books back on the shelves.
Well, wish me luck, he said to his sister. See you after school, I hope.
Alex stayed seated on the floor, discouraging thoughts filling her head. What would happen if she never saw her grandmother again? Would she become a weird, book-hugging lady who traveled from one library to the next? Would her future children believe her when she told them about her connections to the fairy tale world? The bell eventually rang, and Alex got to her feet. She picked up the Treasury of Classic Fairy Tales from where she had dropped it on the floor and decided to take one last look at the illustration before heading to class. Alex turned to the same page she had been talking to before, and to her amazement, the illustration was completely different. Instead of the voluptuous woman with the wings and crown, the picture showed a petite woman with a kind smile and a sky-blue sparkly robe. It was her grandmother. Alex looked around the library in shock as a smile grew on her face. Her grandmother had just sent her a postcard. Chapter 4. The Principal's Office. Connor had only been sitting outside the principal's office for 10 minutes, but it felt like 2 hours. The mystery of why he was there was picking at his psyche like a pair of hungry buzzards. He had been a surprisingly good student this year. Not as great as his sister, perhaps, but good nevertheless.
Connor's grades were decent, although he probably could have done better in science and math, as he imagined most students.